I look at that era of Hollywood as being a time and a place that we only can dream about, and we'll probably never see anything like it again, will we?
No, we won't. That was what they call the golden age of Hollywood. You know, there's big, big, big stars, the big, big, big studios. And even though we have big stars and big studios now, these movies, you know, these classics that DeMille made, he made about 70, over 70 movies. You know, those are the kind of movies people see over and over and over for, you know, it's been decades and decades.
Was it as romantic as I always picture it to be? Whenever I think back about those days, Robert, I think to myself, it was so experimental, and they were doing things that, you know, they were just hoping that they would work. They were praying that they would work, and many times they did, but sometimes they didn't. Is that kind of how it was back then?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I got really fascinated with DeMille myself, you know, and I started reading about him. I was back in my graduate school, actually, studying film history, and I was realizing they didn't have a lot about him, you know, but I decided to just dig deeper, and I realized it was actually about 100 years ago, 1913, you know, 100 years ago, that Cecil B. DeMille and Jesse Lasky and Sam Goldwyn, formerly named Sam Goldfish, by the way.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
They, you know, came out from New York and came out to, you know, let's go west and make movies. And back then, when you talked about, when you even said the word movies, they were actually talking about Nickelodeons. I mean, like a little, you know, 5-cent peep show. You turn a crank and you'd see a stripper, you know, or a guy came in a line in for 5 seconds. Now, you know, that's what movies were. So going from there, and people said, California, that's, you know, nothing but orange groves and desert, which it was back then, farmland. You know, with this vision to do something, you know, that, you know, just like how Las Vegas, you know, is made out of a desert, you know, Hollywood was really just a farmland out here. And he came out here with that vision and turned a little barn, you know, run down a little horse barn into a little place we call Paramount Studios.
What a switch. I mean, really, to take a horse barn and turn it into a major movie studio. Where was he from originally, Robert?
Well, he was born in Massachusetts, and he lived in North Carolina. He lived in New York for a while. His father died at an early age, and his mother raised him and his brother. And she was a she had a school for girls, and she did some playwriting as well as some theatrical booking. And his father was a lay minister, and actually did a little bit of playwriting himself. So he got a little bit of theater background, a little bit of that religious background, and that's where he ended up making these, you know, these biblical epics. You know, Cecil B. DeMille himself, you know, worked as an actor for a while, you know, on Broadway. He didn't do very well with that. And he didn't really know anything about making movies or anything like that until the guys that he worked with, they said, here, let's, you know, put our money together. And Cecil B. DeMille didn't actually have any money, so he had to pawn his family's silver and to get his $5,000 share. He actually asked his brother, can you invest $5,000, which, you know, obviously 1913, that's a lot of money,
yeah,
what it is now. And that would have been 25% of Paramount Pictures, basically. So you think if you had that $5,000, knowing what you know now,
yep,
obviously,
you come out okay. I would think at the time, Robert, probably a bank wouldn't even sit down and talk to you about something like that. It was such foreign territory to them, right?
No, the banks weren't interested in anything like that. You know, Hollywood, I mean, was, like I said, originally Hollywood was a little community, not just the farmland out there, which was, you know, orange grove and so forth, but some people came out to actually, people who actually wanted to create a religious community, mm-hmm, free from alcohol and jazz.
Well, that's, I'm in Chicago right now. That's what our town is built on.
Well, and, you know, speaking of Chicago, you know, that's kind of like one of those lines in the play, in the movie Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, alcohol, jazz, and cigarettes. But Cecil B. DeMille, you know, most people don't know this, he actually produced the first film version of Chicago.
Did he really?
1927. It's a hard movie to find. Yeah, it's not one you're going to, you probably won't get it on Netflix. But the original version, the silent version of that, you know, the play, you know, that you know, most, I'm sure most people in Chicago have seen it or seen the movie at least.
Yep. Yeah,
the Mill did a movie version of it.
Trust me when I tell you, Robert, jazz and guns and cigarettes mean a lot to us in Chicago. They're actually on our city stickers here. That's what we have on our stickers. Why didn't he make it as an actor? What was wrong with his acting ability?
Well, I don't think it was that he just didn't have the ability. I think it just wasn't his destiny. You know, his brother was a very smart playwright. Actually, his brother, you know, William DeMille was probably a smarter character. But Cecil B. DeMille, he got an opportunity. I mean, he had wanted to go into the Spanish-American War. I mean, he was always kind of an adventurer, you know, but they wouldn't take him. And then, you know, friends said, here, why don't we go out here and make movies? And he's like, well, I don't even know anything about movies. And he goes, well, everything you need to know about movies you can learn in one day. Yeah. And at that time, that's basically what was it. And he took him over to Thomas Edison's lab. You know, and they showed, okay, here, this is a camera. This is, you know, you got to point it at something. You can get, like, little flickers of light, and that's what you need to make a movie.
Wow. Wow.
And that was what he started with. And, you know, Sam Goldwyn was a glove salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And Adolf Zucker, you know, eventually who came in on that was a fur coat, you know, furrier, basically. And he was actually one of the first, you know, the producer of Paramount Pictures. So the real struggle was between Cecil B. DeMille, who was really the visionary and kind of like a Walt Disney, you know, type of guy who could just see these images of, you know, he wants to do these biblical epics and these big sweeping stories, you know, Cleopatra and the Ten Commandments, parting the Red Sea. And Adolf Zucker is the money guy here in New York. He's like, no, you know, Cecil, you're killing me. You know, you got to cut the budget in half. You can't, you know, shoot out there in Egypt. You know, you're going to take your Ten Commandments, you're going to make them in Santa Maria, California.
You know, but that said, Robert, when you look at those, even his early stuff, if you look at the silent films, and I'm sure you have, you say to yourself, boy, they must have had some kind of budget on that movie, because look at what they're able to pull off. They must have been spending, for those years, for, you know, for the 19-teens and the 1920s, those were fairly big-budgeted movies, weren't they?
Oh, they were, yeah. I mean, his first movie was called The Squaw Man, which was based on a successful Broadway play at the time. That was 1913, you know, and actually, you know, 1914 was when it first screened. And that was the first real California Hollywood feature film. You know, it was like about an hour and a half. I mean, it was all jumpy on the screen, but it really, you know, it made its mark. And people said, wow, you know, it's a full length, you know, complete story. You know, we can sit here for over an hour and watch this. And that was really, you know, it was a big budget for them. I mean, it, you know, they had to basically take everything they had. I mean, their life savings and pour that into that. And then eventually, you know, he actually made the first version of Ten Commandments, a lot of people don't know, in 1923. And so there was a silent version of it, and they actually parted the Red Sea, and they actually threw in a little splash of Technicolor back in 1923. So, yeah, again, these are big budgets. Once you finally start really pushing these and saying, okay, yeah, how much is this going to cost me? You know, this is Adolf Zucker again, you know, the money guy,
yeah,
you know, the producer. And he's like, you know, it's going to be $1 million, you know, which... You know, and he's like, $1 million, you're killing me.
Yeah.
I mean, now, you know, $1 million, okay, here's $1 million, go give me a cup of coffee, you know. Things have changed. But that, you know, and he eventually started doing some of his own financing because they were saying, you know what, no one wants to see these kind of movies. You know, nobody wants to see a bunch of old guys walking around in tablecloths, you know.
Sure.
You know, little do they know that, you know, the Ten Commandments, you know, particularly the final version of it, the 1959, you know, Yul Brynner, Charlton Heston,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was one of the biggest grossing movies of all time. I mean, he still plays every year around Easter, which, you know, it's coming up.
See, that's the amazing part of the Ten Commandments. You'd be hard-pressed to name too many movies from the 1950s that are still getting an annual showing on television. You know, It's a Wonderful Life certainly does at Christmas time, but that's all that come to mind, those two.
That's it. That really is. And that's why, you know, a lot of people... You know, the younger generation, they don't really know a lot about DeMille. I mean, he, you know, he died in 1959. You know, last movie, you know, Ten Commandments, that was 56. But if you really think about, you know, the directors today, you know, you look at, like, Steven Spielberg. And, I mean, and by the way, the Cecil B. DeMille Award, you know, is coming out next week. Jodie Foster, you know, is winning this year's. You know, the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Mm-hmm.
But all these people, you know, the directors particularly, you know, they owe, you know, really their careers. I mean, pretty much everyone who works in this industry really owes it to Cecil B. DeMille. You know, he made, you know, these 70 big movies. You know, The Greatest Show on Earth was actually the first movie that Steven Spielberg ever saw.
Really?
That's a big circus movie. Again, Charlton Heston, you know, that was, you know, Cecil B. DeMille really put Charlton Heston on the map back then.
And Jimmy Stewart, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, Jimmy was already a pretty established star, but he played the clown in that, right?
That was a great role for him.
Yeah, very different. Very different from most of what James Stewart had done in the past, wasn't it?
It really was. He had the clown mask on the whole time.
Yeah, very
sad clown. Anybody who has seen the Greatest Show on Earth, yeah, you'll really see why, you know, Cecil B. DeMille was always something they call him the greatest showman on Earth, and that's what Spielberg, you know, when he won the Cecil B. DeMille Award a couple of years ago, I think it was 2009. He himself said that Cecil B. DeMille, or C.B. DeMille, as we call him, you know, he's the one who inspired me to make movies. He went as a little kid, you know, Spielberg, saw that movie, The Greatest Showman on Earth, has a big train wreck in it. It was one of the big scenes.
Yeah.
And he saw that. He came home, and he had his Lionel train set, you know, which most of us had as kids, you know, the little train sets. And he started taking that train and knocking it off the tracks. And his dad, you know, came in and said, hey, if you do that one more time, I'm taking that away from you. So, you know, obviously he did it again. But this time he got up a little Super 8 camera and wrecked the train and taking that little home movie of it.
Yeah.
And that's what got it, you know, Steven Spielberg hooked. And if you ever saw Super 8, by the way, it's got the train scenes in there again.
Yep. Yep. Well, I think the funny thing here, Robert, is that not only do these directors owe a lot of their careers to Cecil B. DeMille, but they're the first ones to tell you, yeah, without that guy being a pioneer, I don't think I'd be in the business. So many of them have said that over the years.
Well, absolutely. And they made the big stars. Yeah, they got their start with him. He actually really got many of the women and actually minorities and other people into the business. You know, his top writer, you know, is a woman, Jeannie McPherson, you know, also his mistress, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, the other, you know, the editors, you know, these were women that got into that business doing things. You know, women didn't get, you know, jobs back in, you know, the 20s, you know, in the 30s. And back then, yeah, he was, you know, starting Hollywood. He was having women not just, you know, being the seamstresses and the costume, you know, people, you know, which were good jobs too. But again, you know, the writers and people that really, you know, designed, you know, sets and edited the film and all kinds of things. Yeah, not to mention, you know, on the front of the screen, you know, the big stars, you know, Gloria Swanson, mm-hmm. You know, who really, you know, we probably remember if any of us have seen Sunset Boulevard.
Well, I do remember, and that's kind of like where you get the title of your book, isn't it? Ready When You Are. That comes from, that's a direct line from that movie, isn't it?
Well, you know what? No, people do get that confused. The biggest line out of that movie, out of Sunset Boulevard, is "I'm ready for my close-up."
Right, that's right.
Mr. DeMille. That's kind of, it's similar. Actually, Ready When You Are, that actually came out of while he's filming the Ten Commandments. And as you recall, you know, I mean, they've got, you know, chariot scenes and horses and big, you know, sand dunes and big, you know, cast of thousands movies. So one of the stories that's told is that while he was filming it, you know, he's got, you know, the three cameras set up, you know, close up and the, you know, panning right. And then he's got the back, far back camera C for the, you know, the wide shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so this scene, you know, action, boom, you know, all these horses are running down and chariots and he's like making sure that all this is caught all these different angles. And so what happens is he goes to, you know, after the scene cut, you know, camera, you know, one, you know, how did that come out? And he looks and he sees the camera's like knocked over and, you know, he couldn't even get anything because the camera was just basically buried in sand. And then he looks over camera two and he's, you know, how'd you catch that? You know, and he's the camera two says, yeah, I couldn't get the camera going. It's just not working. It's not working, CB. I'm so sorry. He's really afraid. You know,
yeah.
DeMille's a real tyrant. And then DeMille's like, oh, you know, I'm not going to say what he says on the air here.
But it wasn't pleasant.
As you can imagine, really upset. And he's like, okay, well, at least we got the white shot. You know, and he looks up at camera three. You know, did you get that? And then that's when he says, camera three, ready when you are, CB.